This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we have a great show for you today.
Always,
it is Tuesday, and with us, of course, Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem is with us. He's going to spend a couple of segments with us, talk about what they voted on last night, including the revenue generation. And then we're going to have a couple new guests coming in and talking about cap and trade straight from the Capitol.
Nice.
Straight from one of those Capitol junkies who's there all the time.
And a couple of those Republicans coming in. What do you got?
I don't know. I haven't asked them their registration.
It'll be interesting to see.
Republicans are permitted at KYKN, apparently, is what I've heard.
Really?
Yeah, indeed. And you're even welcome.
Thank you.
You know, here you go.
Thank you.
Mayor, thank you for being here. So there's a couple of hot topics. And let's start off with the hottest is the revenue task force and the votes last night and what's going to be moved forward.
Well, the votes last night were really around the budget, and then we'll take up the revenue issues probably in a couple of weeks. They are considering, the city council is considering two options. One is a flat fee on your utility bill of $10 for individual or homeowners, $30 for businesses per month.
So you think that's set now moving forward?
I think that'll be the discussion will begin with those numbers. There is some interest among some counselors to make it, as they call it, more progressive, which means higher for business and lower for individuals. So there may be some discussion like that, or differentiating between certain kinds of residential customers, certain kinds of business customers. We saw this debate occur around the streetlight fee when that was put into effect, and the council at that time pretty well rejected going into a really complicated staircase of if you have a house of 900 square feet, you pay $5. If it's 1200, it's $10. You know, that kind of, and a business, if you're Walmart, sky's the limit. If you're anything smaller, which is everything,
right,
it goes down. That's the kind of discussion. I don't think that's going to go a long ways, but that'll be, I think, the thing people will want to watch for. There'll be ample opportunity for public comment if folks feel strongly about this. Either way, you know, it should be higher here, lower here, or what are you doing talking about this? I mean, I have my opinion. Mine is we shouldn't talk about it unless we absolutely agree to put it to a vote and let the public vote. I'm firmly convinced that when you reach into a person's pocket to take money, you better ask them first. And I'm not sure that's the direction we're going.
This is the Me Too era. You can't be reaching people's pockets, right? That's objectionable. You have to get permission.
Yeah. It caused more problems than I think anyone wants to think about.
Is there any way you can propose that, Mayor?
Make sure it gets through is a whole different issue.
Yeah.
That depends on votes. I had proposed it to the Revenue Task Force. They recommended to the council that any revenue measure go to a vote. I have continued to recommend that to the council. Whether they will accept that, I don't know. The other one is a little more complicated. It is a tax on paychecks, wages, and a payroll tax. It is around, as I recall, about 0.03%. It's a fairly low number. And that is another one where I think there's interest in making it, again, the so-called more progressive, and make it a little more indexed against income, things like that. That one has some real difficulties. That one requires the state to collect it and then give the proceeds to the city. There have been meetings with the state revenue department that I've had reported to me, and what we're hearing from them is The first time they think they can, now this is, again, bureaucrats to bureaucrats, so they talk their own language, but they're saying the soonest we can do it would be about 2024.
What?
Wow. The expectation is you'd have it next year. That's kind of what the discussion was. So I think it'll be an interesting discussion on that one. The other is people have just been hit with a payroll tax for other purposes by the state.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's right.
Okay. So let's do the math. Hold on a second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Let's do the math. What that means is if it's 0.03, make $50,000 a year, it's $150.
Yeah.
It's $150 a year if you're making 50. Make $100,000, it's $300 or less than $30 a month.
Right.
But, it's a new tax. And, not everybody, nobody loves taxes, I imagine. But the one thing that is appealing about that is the people that come to the community, utilize all the community has to offer, work in the community, and then leave. And they don't invest anything here, and they're not paying. And most of those are people who work for the state government.
And that's the concept, I think, is that they'll be able to do that. Now, whether that could survive scrutiny by the Portland legislative delegation and others. I mean, remember, again, we're saying the state will collect this. There's a lot of pitfalls between here and there. And while it sounds like people from somewhere else will pay this tax, we're not there yet.
Mm-mm.
And the somewhere else is really Portland and Eugene. And whether their legislators are going to allow that to occur, I think there really is a lot of problems associated with this. It will not be as easy as I think folks think it will be. The one that's easy is you put a line on the utility bill and charge people.
It's $10. I think we were talking about 15 at one point, were we?
Yeah, and it's come down.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why, but it raises about it. I just don't remember, but it raises about $8 million, which is about the amount needed to is how the manager put it, to plug the hole that we're facing over the next couple of years. And then the other one, the payroll tax going into effect, allows for some growth in the city's budget. There's a real need for additional police officers, additional firefighters. There is a constant demand we're facing, reasonably so. It's just we don't have the money for it, for homeless programs, for, and then pick your...
Park development
is a huge one that comes out of the general fund. So we can't really expand those programs without... at least talking about additional revenue or making cuts in other areas. And as you know, from when you were on council, we've generally responded to these difficulties like this by cutting deeply into various programs, closing fire stations, things like that.
We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. They just passed the budget for year 2019-2020. And going into, obviously, in this budget, there's none of these increased revenues slotted in yet. But they will be voting on them in a couple of weeks, which ones to finally move forward after the process of winnowing them down and refining the amounts.
Why not put a bond out?
Well, bonds are for capital. Bonds are for like streets or buildings, things like that. You could put out a serial levy of some kind against property. That has not really been talked about. That did not move forward. What really came forward was, and I think it's because we've seen other cities like Kaiser and others do the flat fee on utility bills. I don't think that Salem has done the same kind of spade work that Kaiser did, and doesn't have it quite as directly identified with a specific service. In Kaiser, they did it, but it was really specifically for police services. This one is a broader general fund related. It's worse. I mean, if you look at the amount, it's about 65 police officers, and you can find equations. It doesn't mean we would cut 65 police. It's not that kind of equation. It's just what do you get for that kind of money?
Sure. All right, we're going to simplify this for you after the break. We'll clarify this a little bit, and then I want to talk about the new people who are going into boards and commissions. We've been preaching this on Newsmakers, and they just approved a whole bunch of people to help advise the city council. We'll get to that. This is Brent DeHart, and I'm with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to 1430 KYK on Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. We're talking about revenue. And something I think we all started swimming around there about all the different kinds of revenue raising and options that a civic government has. Yeah. Just for clarity, we're talking about the Polk County levy, and then the people get to vote on the levy. And that lasts 5 years, folks, and that can be used for operations. And actually, it's used specifically for hiring people to do the work, right?
Right.
In the case of the public safety levy. Last time City of Salem did that, it was for parks, and it didn't pass. Mm-mm. It was for parks in the early 2000s. Levies are hard to pass, but you can use them for operations. Yeah. The bond measures you can't use for operations. That's for buildings and roads and things like that. And then, of course, you look at the options that they're looking at right now that are not cyclical. You don't have to go out at the voters over and over and over again where they're just fees, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, gets kind of confusing. All right, to get into, because we've been preaching civic involvement and be involved, because if you don't show up, somebody who's crazier than you are is going to show up.
Right.
Right? Somebody who may not be as rational, as holistic, as community-minded as you are. And don't fool yourself. We're all busy. You have time to do this. But I want to congratulate and thank everybody who signed up to serve boards and commissions of the City of Salem. There's like 19 of them, Dave.
Wow.
There's like 19 boards and commissions. So, and sometimes, you know, Mayor, you struggle to get quality applicants that know anything about the, you know, what they're signing up to do. So three people were appointed to the budget committee. Two of them were reappointed. So there is a budget committee, and the citizens get to have input at least a little bit as it's presented to City Council every year. One I've served on, which I would think a lot of people want to serve, given how much time we cement in our cars, right, is the Traffic Commission.
Ooh.
The Traffic Commission. So somebody joined that. There's some good names in here.
That's a good one. That one, you deal with stop signs, speed limits.
One-way, two-ways.
One-way, two-way. It's a very interesting one. It's not not everybody's cup of tea, but boy, if you're into traffic, it's the one.
Yeah. I mean, how many times in a week do I throw? I'm like, why is this street like, why is it set up like this? And mm-hmm. Why is there not a sign that says this? Or why don't they? Yeah.
And so, why aren't these traffic lights timed better?
And these these commissions are actually, their role in the city charter is to advise city council. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, a city council, just like a legislator, they can't know everything about everything. We can't expect that.
Yeah,
and sometimes they rely on the citizen input. And if the citizen input comes from somebody who's a little wacky or not very bright, then they don't know that, and they get the citizen input. Well, the committee said this, so maybe we should pass it, you know, and so forth. All right, other samples, Civil Service Commission. I forgot about that one. Downtown Advisory Board.
That's a good one.
Joshua Kay. That's so important.
Yeah, I was really pleased that Josh stepped up. He and his wife have just opened a business downtown. Opened. They've been around for a while, but it's next door to the Arbor, which I think Josh's wife already operates. But he has his kind of real estate business down there. It's very, very nice. And he arrived and immediately stepped up to serve on the Downtown Advisory Board. They advise the city, the Urban Renewal Agency and City Council, which is the same thing, on downtown, in this case, downtown programs like various kinds of grants and loans and planning and almost anything downtown where the city's involved, they're involved first.
If you haven't taken a walk downtown and looked at the facades lately, it's summertime, folks. Walk the length of Liberty and High and Commercial and look at the facades and the awnings and what's in the second floor or third floor and has to be renewed, rehabbed, and so forth. And a lot of those things that have happened over the last many years have happened because there's grants. Yeah. And the existence of the grants and who they go to, a lot of that goes through this committee, right? Whether or not there's Christmas lights, whether or not there's decorative flowers, whether or not there is a Wednesday market, all of these things.
Benches. I mean, is there a bench?
Everything having to do with how much you can enjoy downtown, what the streetscape's going to look like, right? And so forth. Anyway, Downtown Advisory Board, really, really critical one. There's a cultural, I love this name. Sometimes we have names, Salem Cultural and Tourism Promotion Advisory Board.
Right.
So those are people that have, but they have their thumb on some money, don't they?
Yes, they do. Quite a bit of money. They are, I've served on that and chaired it over the years at different times. And that one deals with grants using the hotel motel tax that's collected, about a little over 9% of a hotel or motel bill here goes to that tax. A chunk of that goes to about 25% goes to Travel Salem. The rest is available for all the stuff that goes on where people come to the city for grants. It'd be the art fair, the carousel. It takes care of the old historic houses, Bush House, Deepwood, Gilbert House. I mean, I can kind of run through the list. It's quite a – then there are cultural activities. The Willamette Valley Heritage Center gets a grant, Hallie Ford Art Museum. There's a list of those kinds of programs, and it really enriches the cultural. But it also is, there'll be a car show down at Riverfront Park. Usually they've had a grant from us on that. World Beat Festival gets a grant from this. So things that go on around town, it really allows the city to provide seed money for a whole batch of different organizations that really, I think, enrich the community, make it a lot of fun to be here.
Does some of that go into 4th of July fireworks or movies
fireworks,
in the park?
Softball. We have these softball tournaments from all over there. We were a big-time softball town, actually. People come here quite a bit to play softball. Plus, we have our internal leagues. Big chunk of that comes out of this fund that this particular commission deals with. So this is a really good one. This is one of people like the, you know, you want movies in the park or you want to have whatever, you name it. It's a good good one.
It's a big chunk of money, and it's a lot of influence in that in terms of what the city council does with the hotel and motel tax, which we affectionately refer to as the TOT tax because we don't want anything to sound like what it actually is. Transit occupancy tax. We can't say hotel motel tax. That would be too transparent.
Too straightforward.
I see Ryan Gale got appointed, and that is awesome.
Yeah.
And a couple people got reappointed, so four new appointees there, and the last one on the list from yesterday, the Public Library Advisory Board. Of course, the library has advisory.
That's a hot one right now.
And there's two new people, Gretchen and Catherine Daniels. Gretchen Kopich.
Yeah, that's a fairly hot one right now. The library, as you recall, people passed a bond issue to seismically upgrade the library, so that is all being worked on right now. A big chunk of it by the Library Board. At the same time, there has been collection work going on with the city's book and other pieces collection.
What do we say?
Certain things are going out of the collection, and there's a real hot discussion among sort of library patron types that are they destroying our library? Are they taking out too many? Is this the right thing to do? Are they, you know, it gets real interesting. And this board makes real strong recommendations to City Council on how to proceed with this kind of stuff.
So. There you go, folks. There'll be a lot more things to talk about, even just coming out of last night's meeting. But we're going to have to let the mayor go to another appointment. And we have a guest I've been wanting to have on for the entire legislative session. Really value his opinion. And we're going to hear from Bruce Anderson and Tom Hoffert here in a minute. So stick with us, folks. We're going to be right back. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is sponsored by Color Tile of Salem and also Sylvan Learning Center. Welcome back, folks. It was great to talk to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem here last couple sessions, last couple of segments. And with us today, now we have two guests to talk about, wow, what's going on at the Oregon Capitol from the inside view. We've got Tom Hoffer, the CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and an exemplary individual he is. And we have Bruce Anderson from Northwest Natural, who's part of his many job responsibilities requires him to be in the big house a lot. Like every day, Bruce?
As much as I need to be there, yes. Thank you. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate
it. Oh, it's great to have you. And we'll have you back because we're going to have a couple segments today. And between now and the 1st of July, we'll probably have a bunch of fast-moving updates, won't we? What do you think, Tom?
It ought to be a very interesting end to this legislative session that has seen just unprecedented dollars brought in through a lot of different tax mechanisms. And Brent, is one of our commitments to always bring in just really the top end of people who understand what's going on, bringing Bruce in to explain a little bit about what the nuts and bolts of cap and trade truly mean is just a great opportunity. So thank you for having us in today.
No, oh, it's great. Cap and trade is one of those things that's so very important. And honestly, even as much as we talk about it, I don't think we are able to educate our listener well enough. So it's great to have your expertise. Let's start before we dive into Bruce. Tom, what?
Yeah, please don't dive into
Bruce.
We're
going to tackle him.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Tackle him up against the wall. Tom, you're watching, of course, Cap and Trade, and you're looking after the best interests of small, medium, large-sized businesses in our region, the entire region. So in the role of the Salem Area Chamber, and of course, the Salem Chamber as a member of the Oregon State Chamber, any reactions and just what's going on in the last 5 months?
Well, there's some natural feedback that we've gotten, of course, from our members as we look at quantifying the dollars that could be in play here, Brent. Our role with the Salem Chamber obviously is to, first and foremost, keep our members informed of what's occurring and provide opportunities for feedback at a variety of venues, and that can be at the Capitol itself, direct to senators and representatives. But I think as we look at this topic today, the reality of what sits in front of us is we have a very, very unique situation playing out at the Capitol, where we have a walkout by the Republican Senate, and we have a standoff with our governor and, of course, our Peter Courtney in the most important role of the state Senate. And as we look at this, this is heading down the tracks as something that there's really only one mechanism for this not to pass in this legislative session, thus the walkout. I think it's important that we look at the nuts and bolts of what this truly means, how it's going to affect businesses, and really how it affects the consumer. I can think of nobody else better than Bruce to provide some real facts on this. And understanding that this is an incredibly complex issue. There are very wise people on both sides of the aisle that understand, as we look at the type of impact of cap and trade, the significance of how this hits businesses and the messaging it says to be in business in Oregon, or even future, relocate to Oregon or start a business in Oregon. There's some real tangible things that need to be considered by businesses, and we just want to make sure we're sending the right message. But without the foundational understanding of what we're looking at, and understanding maybe a little the history of how we got here and what is at play even at a national level and why this type of topic is facing Oregonians today, I think it's really hard to set the framework for such a conversation. So that's why I felt it was so important to bring in an expert like Bruce. Bruce's company has just done incredible work in the Oregon market to make sure not only as responsible power providers and the ability for natural gas to be accessed all over in a very conscious way for both our environment and in respect to the ratepayers. I think the fact-finding is a great foundation for the conversation, but truly understand this is going to be a major effect on business and consumers within our state.
That's Tom Hofford, CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. Tom, go ahead and lead Bruce to carry us through this conversation.
Well, I would say this. As we look at there's a lot of big bullet points that you're going to hear out in the media from a lot of different resources. Anytime I get in any conversation, I always ask people to understand the facts behind where we're heading. And Bruce is a sage historian on why cap and trade is in front of us now. And I would just invite Bruce to kind of set the table, can give a little historical perspective, what's occurring on a greater scheme even outside of Oregon, and then why we are talking about House Bill 2020 today.
Well, this has been policy under consideration for a number of years now. Oregon made the decision a few years ago to join this organization, you might call it, called the Western Climate Initiative, comprised of a few states along with, it used to be two provinces in Canada, Quebec, and they're still a member, but Ontario, when they had a change over in their control of the government, they pulled out of Western Climate Initiative. So it's got a few mainly Western states out here. The idea was to try and bring together some sort of a system to get greenhouse gas emissions reduced. Climate change is something that is here. My company certainly acknowledges that, and that's something that we do need to be doing something about. How we go about it, doing it, that's another question. So we've got a lot of different policies and approaches to that. The bill that has before the legislature right now, House Bill 2020, had been under development for at least a good year, I would say. There was about, I want to say 2 years ago, I'm tapping my memory here, sorry. Mm-hmm. But about 2 years ago, there were a couple of proposals to look at doing something. It's mm-hmm. called cap and invest and that sort of thing. So the idea was to try and cap our emissions as a state with this and enter into this marketplace system. So you would...
Bruce, if I may, that marketplace would just exist in Oregon for Oregon companies?
No.
So no?
No.
It would be for the whole Western...
Yeah, well by joining into the... or joining with the Western Climate Initiative, there is, and this... I'm sorry, this detail I don't thoroughly understand and know about, but there is a marketplace that similar to what you might have on a commodity system. So the idea would be we would cap our emissions at a certain level, and then you would have these allowances that would be allocated out there. Those would then be publicly traded. The dollars from that would come back to the state, and they go for doing different things. So that kind of fast forward to, and the legislature went through a lot of hearings and work on this in the interim. This year, they did hold a series of hearings at the Capitol. Then they took the show on the road and held several town halls around the state. They also had a couple that they actually streamed in, from one from Baker City and the other from Newport, just to allow folks the opportunity to testify on the measure. And so they had all of the Joint Committee on Carbon Reduction went around and listen to what folks had to say about it. So there were a lot of things that occurred out there.
Did they listen to anybody out there?
Sure they did.
Okay.
Sure they did. So House Bill 2020 was introduced for the 2019 session, went through several iterations, several proposed amendments. I think at last count we were up to the -116 amendments. So it's very unusual for a bill to go through a lot of different, that extensive series of amendments. And the years that I've been lobbying and working at the Capitol, that's probably more than I've ever seen in ever. So, and so everybody's got a different opinion, different view of things. There were the one a set of amendments that folks that were really wanting to make strive to really make a change in that were the Dash 102s. You can go to the legislature's website, also known as OLIS. I think it's OregonLegislature.gov, and you can click on the link to type in House Bill 2020. That'll pop up a page, and then you can look at the various amendments and items that folks had submitted to on this issue.
Well, let's explain to somebody who is never going to look at a government website. Mm-hmm. All right, let's try to get the listener who is not going to go to the website to get them to understand how the impact is going to have on their life.
Of the bill?
Yep.
It depends on where. It depends. The version that has been that in its present form right now, House Bill 2020, and I'm sorry, I think it's the A engrossed version, does bring in some allowances for and consideration for impacts for price impacts for low income persons. Customers of Northwest Natural, for example, if you're a low-income customer, you will see no impact whatsoever from this measure, because there is language in the bill that says low-income customers. So both so I think natural gas customers, there are three natural gas utilities in the state of Oregon, by the way. So you'll have those folks will be considered. There's also some consideration for electric customers as well. So the aim is to stem the impact on rates that are going to go up. There's going to be a price on carbon, and then that would be traded in the commodity marketplace.
All right, let's clarify that. Price on carbon, that will be determined by the marketplace, or will it be set?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, that will be set because we'll enter into this marketplace to have these allowances and allocations traded, and then they'll come back and they'll go for doing the different things. Again, the goal is to drive down greenhouse gas emissions by a set percentage. So they'll start out at a certain level in 2021, and then those we'll have those allowances to go out to offset these rate increases, and those will drop to zero by 2050. And that's the goal, where they want to have, I think it's 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions based on, I want to say, 1990 levels, if I'm not mistaken.
We're talking to Bruce Anderson from Northwest Natural, who is also president-elect, soon to be president of the Santa Maria Chamber of Commerce, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Tom?
He is. We're very blessed.
Got him right online,
Bruce.
And a Kaiser city councilor. And yeah, he's all over the place. I don't know how he does it. Really quickly, before we take a first break, what's the magnitude of the dollar amounts we're talking about? You're talking about how some of that money's going to come back into the state to be used for various things. I think that's where a lot of people have a rub, where they're seeing it as a potential slush fund for pet projects or however they want to characterize it. But what's the magnitude of the dollars in terms of a cost or a tax increase to the Oregonians?
Tax increase on Oregonians? Well, it's estimated that prices on gasoline would probably rise in the first year about 16 cents a gallon. I know that's been quoted by a lot of folks. That'll go up from there. Petroleum products like oil, gas, diesel will not be brought into the bill. They'll be covered by, they're not excluded from the bill. Let's put it that way. If trying to be clear here.
Yeah.
Fossil
fuels that are liquid that are burned.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Okay. So you're going to see, you would likely see a price increase at the pump. Natural gas rates would also rise as well under the legislation. Although, again, we do have in the current iteration of the bill, we do have, would get allowances so that we can help offset those rate increases to our customers. So that's going to include homeowners, businesses, and industrial customers. And I just would point out one other thing, and that is 2 years ago, Senate Bill 1547 was passed, and that was the coal to clean bill. The goal there was because we, you know, both of our large investor-owned utilities, PGE and Pacific Power, both derive a good chunk of their power from burning coal to generate electricity. So that's a lot. That's dumping a lot of carbon into the air. So the coal to clean measure allowed them to step that back and completely eliminate that from their systems. Wow. So we've been seeing that bringing in more renewable energy in the form of solar electricity, or electricity from solar panels, wind turbines, and so forth.
All right, we're going to come back, and we're going to try to get to that dollar figure. We can quantify the tax for the corporate activities tax, and we're going to try to get Bruce to help us understand the quantity of tax dollars in Oregonians' pockets. With me today is Tom Hofford, CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and Bruce Anderson of Northwest Natural. We got more to come. Stick with us. This is Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. Welcome back, folks. In the studio with us today, we've got Tom Hofford, CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. He is the steward of the most pro-Salem institution in the region. So steward of all the employers and all the citizens in our quality of life. So I want to thank you for the work you're doing at the Salem Area Chamber and how much influence you exert on behalf of us, all of us. And he's brought with us Tom. Tom has brought with us Bruce Anderson to help explain cap and trade. Tom, a little bit about how the chamber is feeling about things going on at the Capitol.
Well, it's certainly been one of the roughest sessions for business in recent memory. And we're talking about on a couple fronts, Brent. Number one, more than ever, business was centerline for opportunity and dollars. And that's very frustrating and challenging for our small business owners, of which are the vast makeup of the greater Salem area businesses as a whole. I would say on a second front, the loss of Senator Jackie Winters is something that cannot be overlooked. And the bandwidth and influence that Jackie had both inside the Senate office and with the Oregon constituency is just profound. I can remember being very early on in my career and Jackie just throwing an arm around me and saying, hey, how'd you like to sit down for a little coffee and I can explain the world to you a little bit. And when you get those opportunities and, you know, you look at fast forward 20 plus years later, and to lose a leader like that in such a pivotal time is a big blow to this state's business community. And Jackie got it on all fronts. Inclusion was but one piece of her ethos, and to see the work she did on behalf of small business owners and restaurateurs in this state is just so significant, and that loss is not replaceable. So, yes, this session, has been rather challenging on business. I would say one great part about Oregon businesses in general, and what makes Oregon such an incredible state for business, is the ability to pivot, find ways to still make things happen and do what's right for the Oregon community. That being said, there's a whole lot more tough factors that we're facing now coming out of when this session does come to conclusion. So, Brent, you had asked the question of, hey, how do we quantify cap and trade and what does it truly look like? As Bruce mentioned, it is very tough to put a dollar number on that. So I'd rather really personalize it to the listener right now, and how it translates into the greater business community as a whole. So as a citizen, things that you can expect to see, Bruce mentioned the price of a gallon of gasoline. Oregon is already one of the most expensive places to hit a refill button. So pulling in, throwing your debit card in, and watching the meter tick is a little bit of an act of finger crossing and hand kneading. You can see the price a gallon go up between 15 cents and 22 cents a gallon is by most of the experts what they're estimating. Now, most people, if you're looking at a 20-gallon tank and you start to do the math, and I hope those listeners at home and in businesses right now are doing a little bit of that math, and then really take a hardline look at how many times you're refilling your tank. Now, is that going to drive you onto the bike? Are you now going to be doing mass transit all over Salem-Keizer? Well, that is certainly one of the goals of this type of initiative. Of course, many would come to a pretty straightforward look in my face and say, hey, Tom, by the way, it rains 250 days a year in this city. And while all those bike lanes certainly provide opportunity, they oftentimes are not full on those such days. So people are still using the gasoline vehicle as a primary source of transportation, both in commerce and in private life. So a 20 cent gallon raise in gasoline prices is going to affect all residents. Second piece you're going to see is a raise in your natural gas rates. I would like to say, I mean, to have the companies, let's talk localized to Salem, when Salem-Keizer area. When you have Salem Electric, PG, and Northwest Natural, all three of those companies do an exemplary job of making sure the energy that they provide into the network is already done in a very environmentally conscious way. They are designed to help the consumer see both affordability and most of all, consistency. Because when you look at energy as a whole, we take it for granted, and then you have times of sudden chaos or a natural disaster and the like. So credit to those three companies for keeping Salem moving at all times and doing so in a very environmentally conscious way. So when you look at now a target zone of, hey, natural gas is where we're going to go after, ratepayers are who ultimately pays that difference. You're going to see double-digit rate increase on your natural gas bill. That is not reflective of Northwest Natural as a company at all. That is reflective of policy decisions such as this. So as a consumer, tabulate that at home, see its influence on both your residency and your business, and understand that we need to take a very comprehensive look at thoughtful public policy as a whole in all decisions we make and what it says to the greater business community and for people who may be interested in doing business in Oregon and say, is this the right place? I certainly hope we're thoughtful and can have those opportunities to entice future businesses to want to be here and don't send public policy verbiage and policy that makes them say, wow, this isn't the right place to be.
So, Bruce Anderson, do you think that's an accurate statement? Do you think you and the other two providers, by you, I mean Northwest Natural, and the other two providers are projecting what kind of rate increases are going to be required?
Well, the one thing that we're not quite sure yet is the current version of the bill. There's a lot of unknowns right now that we're not able to calculate until we see the final version and how this is all going to play out in that marketplace. One thing I do want to just point out is that Northwest Natural did start a few years ago our own low carbon pathway, where we're seeking to reduce our systems and emissions by 30% by 2035.
All right, we're going to have to cut you off. We're running out of time, but this is important enough. Would you come back in a couple of weeks after the session ends?
You bet.
All right, we're going to have Bruce Anderson back on. He'll be the president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and maybe we'll get Tom Hoffer to bring him back, too. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKM.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKM. KN. Salem is listening.